folks, and welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast was brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for the past 2 decades, 8 years of which he's been actively buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in the city on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So his company has a dedicated loan officer in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions. So you're probably already aware that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or if you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on emil.gorgis, that's emil.gorgis, emil.gorgis@tokyorealty.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, we've got three members of the JREP panel, Matt Tracy and yours truly, and we talk akiyas, Japan's abandoned or vacant homes in the countryside, but not only. We look at some case studies, what can be done with them. We review the options available for purchase generally on the market. We watch Matt do his thing, show us some good old-fashioned akiya hunting live, or at least the online side of the hunt. And then we zoom out of the actual property research and think about what exactly is the right mindset in which one should approach these akiya projects. We talk about the potential emotional, physical, and financial benefits and what it takes to make that akiya dream come true. Whether it's marketing, capitalizing on tourism trends, domestic or international, and setting up your perfect home away from home or off the grid home or countryside home, whatever the case may be. And then speaking of relationships, we also segue a bit into working with Japanese realtors or property brokers, the proactive versus reactive ones who are out there, and how to foster good relationships with the good ones among them. And then how they and we as property professionals manage client expectations, and also a little bit about how these expectations differ between Japan and other countries around the world. So really good chat, casual in nature, but quite deep, I thought. Hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you again on the other side. Welcome back, the Japan Real Estate Panel, Real Estate Experts Panel.
Yes.
And today, this is the format of the panel in which we can talk about shit without Emil telling us that we're not allowed to talk about shit. We can go edition. Off topic.
Special edition.
Yeah. Special 34 degrees Celsius edition. How's the weather where you're at?
So I've actually been for the last month basically constantly up in Gunma near Maebashi, which is precisely where the hottest weather is. Fortunately, I've been in the mountains near rivers, so that's good. But yeah, it's blisteringly hot outside of Tokyo as well. So right now I'm currently in Tokyo.
I got a couple of customers, like a father and son, a single customer, but they're you call them a pair, who are looking for a property in Gunma Prefecture that they can, they're fine with them, you know, slightly dilapidated because they're DIY types. And they want to...
I know one that might be useful.
Gunma's great.
Yeah?
I want Gunma, people to go to Gunma so bad. Gunma's awesome. It's kind of like Nagano, but it's closer.
Yeah, they want a home and a shop. They've got a business... Yeah. I forgot what it is. They told me something to do with manufacturing, so they need space for a little workshop and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Doable.
No, yes.
Doable.
There's someone I know that he's got a lead on like a 6-bedroom jobby in Gunma. So, and it was just too good not to pass up. So I'll put a pin in that one. Yes, please.
Any listings with, you know, sizable land and a reasonably sized house, please send them my way. It doesn't have to be in good shape.
Okay.
By structurally sound,
you made me curious. Let me see what I can find real quick.
Oh, that's why I love talking to you people.
I just love looking at weird shit.
You love looking at weird shit. A friend of mine just went and bought a one of those ski and ski out places in Niigata.
Oh, Niigata, huh? Mm.
Just finalizing one of those ourselves.
Yeah.
The kind of prices that we were talking about, like 20,000-30,000.
$20,000-$30,000.
Dollars, yeah.
No, she actually got, she ended up getting hers for under a mil.
Wow.
Where was it again?
I think just walking distance from the prince, something or other. I don't quite know. Yeah. Yeah.
So actually, you know what? He's got a client looking in the area who's unfortunate. Well, maybe fortunately, but extremely picky. So we haven't yet, you know, stuck a fork in it. But they are curious about the Yuzawa area. Seems to be kind of reasonably priced, actually. So.
Yeah, it's just that a lot of these places have a really big monthly, like it's, you know, you might spend under a mil, but then you're going to be paying the body corporate, which is, you know.
You're talking about under a million yen. I thought it was about a million
US. Under a million yen. Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
Those are being sold because the owner needs to pay $300 a month and they're just not up to it.
Right.
Correct. Right. Yes. And also if you're not using it, then it's just pretty silly. So.
And you can't rent them out to anyone because the owner unions have got to stick up their behinds.
No, you can.
Ziv. Okay. Give me more details on what that person wants in Gunma.
I will bring it up as Tracy speaks. Go for it, Tracy.
Oh, I was just going to say that actually, if you create a private members club.
Yep.
You're able to rent, like you're able to let other people use it. Mm. So you can, if you create a private members club. And you have a group of people who want to
fractional ownership.
Yeah, but you own it, you manage it, and then
that's the thing. Fight. It's always doable. Like members club, friends and family, you can call it whatever you want. But then there's no Airbnb. There's nobody managing.
No booking platforms. No, you can't put it out there. I mean, it is not going to be passive income for you. Like, exactly. It's not going to be put it out on the World Wide Web and you're going to get bookings. It's not like that at all. You have to really have a pool of either past guests or people who are interested or, in my friend's case, she has a big connection to the base. So these are sort of service people, like, you know, so that's a little closed loop almost. You can totally rent it out. I mean, she's not really looking at a profit center. She just wants to have a free place that she owns. It doesn't cost her anything. And, we'll pay for a whole bunch. Like, we'll, give her a little bit of cash, but it's not going to be, it's not a income producing property as such. But that's what I'm interested in.
No, that's doable if you're happy to be hands-on. So Matt, they're looking for, if possible, flat area, not in the forest or woods, elevation under 200 meters to avoid, salty, snowy streets and so forth. Surrounded by rice fields could be nice, space enough to park minimum 4 cars. Shed barn with minimum space of 35 square meters is a big plus. At least 2 separate rooms to function as bedrooms. And either 2 stories or a house with a stretched out floor plan, and the less neighbors, the better.
What's their budget?
6.5 million-ish.
Okay, hold on.
And again, the condition of the house, as long as it's not falling apart, is probably not a big issue.
Do they have any land size requirements?
Anyone?
I mean, you said parking 4 cars, but do you have a number? Above 200 meters squared, I'd say.
Yeah, something like that. So they said the house should be minimum 75, 80 square meters, and the land should be 200-300 square meters. At least, the more the better, they wouldn't mind.
What's this?
Oh, we're getting a live recording of Matt doing
Oh my goodness. What is this? What's that? Is that that's the song from Nightmare Before Christmas? What is this?
What is this?
See, this is a really good video because it shows this is how we do things live, right? And this
we should be live streaming this. Hold on.
And it, you know, and you can actually you can screen share if you want to. You can see, like, you know,
this is I've just allowed. Oh my God! And it's in Kiryu. Oh, so Kiryu is really interesting because it's right east of Maebashi. There, it's kind of a hipster joint. Not too many. Well, that's a bad word. What's the good word for hipster? It's
up and coming.
Up and coming. There we go.
Sorry, is this the hipster telling us that hipster is a bad word?
Yeah, right. It is. Not being totally serious. So Kiryu is really interesting though because it's got some cool like people, I guess, who are there. I know some people who are up there. It has three, count them, 1, 2, 3 craft breweries in it, and it is also on an express line straight to Tokyo that has a special connection to Wi-Fi.
Ooh, they're German, so the craft brewery thing would be a big plus, I think.
Yeah, Ziv, let's see, it is, how big is it? So number one, price, let's see, actually number one, land size is 434.8 meters squared. The building itself is 191.2 meters square. It is it's one story, 5.9 mil. Its address, well, it's in Kiryu. I'm not going to give you the precise address because that's special.
That's proprietary.
Have to
pay to unlock that level. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess, hold on here. Let me do this. Super.
You can screen share.
Well, here's what I'm going to do because I'm so fucking paranoid. I'm going to screenshot the pictures and then I'll share my screen of the screenshots.
Okay. Got it.
There's only 4 images. I can't exactly be sure what's, well, actually 5.
And if you want to block, if you're going to screen share the screenshots, then if there's anything you want to block out, then do that now. Like just grab a, you know, and put it into preview and then just cover up what you don't want to show.
I don't think I've got anything that damning open.
I don't think they're not Akia hunters in the sense that they'll need deep investigation of anything. They're just looking for a bit of a bargain. So I doubt they'll
be. Well, no, specifically, so like because we are partnered in any way, like just let me do it this way.
Yep.
let's move you over here and then where do you go? There you are. Okay, and let's do that, Ziv's special.
Now, where are you today, Ziv? You're in a different location from where you normally are.
No, we just rearranged the office because we rented another office upstairs. So we took the big table upstairs and we put a bunch of small tables in the office downstairs. So I'm just facing another way in the same office. That's all.
Oh, okay.
You made it look different, but it's actually not.
Yes, I ran, like before we recorded, I quickly ran and constructed that little cupboard behind us so that it looks different.
Where did the document go? Shit. Come on, here you are. Okay, let's do that. Let me go in here. All right, ready to screen share. Share screen.
Are you ready?
Rumble. Share. Am I? Yes, it does appear that I am sharing my screen at this point.
Correct. Yes, no problem. Yes.
All right, here. Actually, let's do it in preview because that makes it easier to shuffle. Come on, there you go. All right, so here's the exterior.
Yep.
You said they wanted space for like crafts and whatnot. So there's that
workshop. Yeah, but is that the main? That's not the main house. That's a separate shed, is it?
This is something that I would have to figure out. I do not have. Yeah, I don't even have.
Is this off an Akia bank? Is it?
No,
it's a realtor, right?
Yeah. It's an Akia, but it's not off an Akia bank.
Yeah.
There's this. So these are the only images available.
Yep.
That looks like a separate.
I'm guessing it might be separate, right? Who knows now?
Yeah, I can't tell. Let's see. That looks like it's one. I like how I'm like staring into the camera.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing because I'm on the phone too. Fortunately, the camera is not on me.
I don't know. Me, that looks like one. And then like over on the left side, there's that gate.
Yeah.
I want to say that's like the driveway. That looks like a single unit.
Maybe.
But yeah, this from spending about 30 seconds looking into it, this is what I can tell you exists in Kiryu, which is a cool place to be. And for 5.9 million. So.
And we talked last time about how the difference between how people like us see the raw bones of a place compared to a buyer. And if you know, because we're looking at this stuff every day. And, you know, we're just so used to seeing what it is now. And also, you know, with the, we've seen what can happen with properties that have been similar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we know what's possible. So it is actually easier for us to see the potential.
Well, so the nice thing about this spot is it's obviously being managed. And I can say that beyond the shadow of a doubt. Because if you looked, I don't want to share my screen again because it's a pain in the ass. But if you look at, number one, it's relatively clean. So there you go. But number two, also, if you look at the walls, you can tell it's a relatively old building.
Yeah.
But the walls have been lifted, like everything on the walls has been lifted relatively recently because you can still see the imprint of everything.
Yep.
So it's obviously an older building, but somebody is doing something to it often enough that it is kept in this condition.
Yeah.
So again, for 5.9, like, you know, if I mean, really, if you want like some luxurious Tokyo apartment, guess what? Go buy a luxurious Tokyo apartment. Like, that's the solution to what you want.
No, different buyers have different needs. So
exactly.
Would you, so if they were interested in looking at it or purchasing it, would you be then putting your agent in touch with us for us to communicate with them? Because I mean, they're okay. Of course, they're okay to pay a normal agency fee, but I don't think they'll go much beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, I just want, you know, like kick them over, or maybe that's a discussion for us to have kind of privately about how to conduct that. But, oh, okay. And looking at this too. So the Maadori is listed, not to go back into shit, but the Maadori is listed as being Kojo plus, like what, Sumu Iru, how do you pronounce that? Joi, I think. So like workshop and living and residence.
Yep.
And it was built in Showa 43, so that's what?
So, 43, that's... 43, that's...
Yeah, see, what we're doing right now is 69. One of the main reasons...
1970.
Okay, great. You should have just... 43.
Yeah, 43. I'm 45.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I'm 40. No, so it's...
68.
Yeah.
And it, so far as I can tell, it has not been... renovated, but again, I mean, literally, I'm looking at what 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Well, if it's already designated the workshop and residence, that means that at least we know zoning restrictions are okay with a business, right?
Yeah.
But we don't know. About,
you know what? Send me an email about it, and because like normally we just work directly with clients, and like, you know, we hook people up with stuff and whatever. Send me an email about it.
I'm a bit curious actually about what you guys think about what is the state of the supply of real estate across Japan. Definitely. So there are a lot, you know, everyone's talking about how Japan is dying very quickly because all the old people are dying and there's a whole bunch of akiya that really do have an owner, but they're technically being unused. But if people are buying up the akiyas, what's happening with that supply? I mean, it's just, I mean, there's a lot of crap out there for sure, but the stuff that's habitable or useful, is there, you know, is the supply, is now the interest in akiya bringing the supply and the demand closer together, or is it still accelerating the other way?
It's from our point of view, we've just onboarded a few clients actually with some stuff that I'm not yet ready to kind of talk publicly about.
Yeah.
But what people are starting to realize both domestically and internationally is sort of what I keep harping on about is like use case. Stop thinking of it as a house, but like, what can you do with, you know, basically, call it a box or whatever, but like in a specific environment, understanding that environment, and then figuring out how you can leverage those assets, those environmental assets, to your advantage. And both domestically and internationally, people, investors, I would call them, are finally starting to come around and realize, wait, holy shit, there's like an entire country of untapped, a few specific types of untapped resources that occupy.
I think the confusion that a lot of people get into is like if somebody contacts Matt or somebody who deals in specifically Akiyas, and they're in the mind frame of I'm looking for a cheap holiday home,
right?
That's not the place to go. Like Akiya is not a cheap holiday home. No. It's a potential. It's a project. It's something that you need.
Well, I mean, they can be. Make no mistake. They definitely can be, but it's not 100% of the time that they are. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Kind of like what I just did right now for the client's given parameters, what fits that? Sometimes you get a hit, sometimes you don't. But you have to be able to parse through all of that data in order to determine whether or not
it's viable. There doesn't seem to be, from where I sit, there doesn't seem to be any shortage of housing or buildings to buy or land to buy.
There's not. And I mean, I'm kind of an extreme example, but like just anecdotally, just through the business that I conduct and because of that, what I know, like, why is anybody building anything?
Exactly. Well, we know why.
Well, yeah, we know why, but from a strictly like logical point of view, there's stuff everywhere. Like there's no reason whatsoever.
There's except no shortage of housing. Yeah. So no, it's just, and I've been watching a couple of YouTube channels lately actually, because people have been renovating Akiyas and actually been like, documenting their progress. And I just went and saw one the other day actually in person, and like it is a completely new house what she's changed it to. It looks amazing. So she bought something in Tokyo that couldn't be rebuilt, and you know, was pretty grim, but with some fairly, you know, some smart renos, she's actually now got a short-term rental property that is going to really give her good cash flow.
Pay for her
kids to go through uni. So it's like, it's really cool.
It's totally doable. Both in the city as well as, I mean, obviously outside, but I mean, the city is a little bit more, especially Tokyo, is a little bit more difficult. It sounds like one of the spots that your associate picked up, I want to guess, is with like on one of the like Shitamachi side streets.
No, it's in Yoyogi.
Really? Okay. Ooh. Very nice. Very nice.
It was a bit of a rare find, but then she had real estate agents who knew what she was looking for. And she actually wasn't looking. It was just the real estate agent knew her business, knew it because she's a client of mine. So, and I do a lot of work with her with the short-term stuff. So, she's not a client of mine anymore. She's actually off on her own. She's doing her own thing, which is fantastic. You know, the real estate agent who she dealt with originally, you know, just found this place and just gave her a call and said, hey, why don't you look at buying this? And she went, okay. And so she found the money and did it. So there was there are some smart real estate agents who keep their clients in the back of their head and go, yep. You know, so there's not many of them, to be fair. There's not many.
No,
there's not many that use their own initiative that will, you know, if they come across something, they'll go, oh, look, I've got a person who really could benefit from this. So, and then to have the people jump on it.
You can, with some sort of massaging and relationship nurturing and constant communication, you can turn a lot of them into those kinds of agents.
Mm.
But the typical, a lot of time we get Westerners that come in with this, all right, I'll just, hey, you. Sick, go get me 5 properties. I want this, and that, and keep searching until you find. It's not gonna, like, you gotta wine and dine and like you know, do something, create a relationship and put it in place before you can kind of figure out who might be the agents that might be able to
do that. Or that is true. Or you could just have a different business model where you get paid to do the work and then do the work.
Would be your business model.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, that being said, occasionally, you know, we've got long-term clients who, you know, pick up, you know, they're always interested in something. If I stumble across something just accidentally, I'll flip it over to them. And so like,
sure.
No, but Matt, I mean, also the fact that you're in the position to do that, we work with our favorite agents in this way too, but the reason we can work with them in this way is because we've worked with them in the past
and we have
the relationship.
Exactly.
They know that we're not just like some, you know, out of the blue tire kickers, you know, sending them on a wild goose chase and then disappearing, right? Like they know, and they know that if, you know, if we've got a request from a client and we've actually contacted them and asked them to look for that, that means that that client has already paid someone and is a serious client, right?
Yes, is a verified lead, let's call it. Exactly. Qualified lead, let's say. Yeah, that sort of relationship building absolutely must be done. From the consumer point of view, though, yeah, they're... like that's not gonna.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard. Like even that stuff that we were talking about before we pressed record. Sometimes it really does feel like you're sort of shoving the square peg in the round hole, and that's kind of like it's a little frustrating because you really do feel like you're pushing shit uphill. But and you know you've got to be assured of like getting the return on the end. Otherwise, you just you know was it Sisyphus who was just like constantly rolling the ball up the hill? So,
yeah.
I mean, if it's a lost cause, it's a lost cause. You know, do your best, but at some point, you just kind of got to be able to decide, like, okay, this isn't.
It's good if we can sift through that and, like, not actually enter the relationship, if, you know, try to figure that in advance. We fired our first engaged customer for the first time a couple of months ago, and we were very, very close to firing a new one just a couple of weeks ago, but they've shaped up. Like they recognize that if they're going to push it further, they're not going to have anyone to serve them. So they're good.
Sounds like you really did. You went above and beyond the call of duty, Zip. You got them into shape.
We interrupt this broadcast. I always wanted to say this. We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, or if you just need summer quiet to hide away from the world. So they offer a variety of options for families, for corporate relocations, or simply if you're transitioning between homes in Tokyo. Now, the properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really, the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They've got fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in, a fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but long-term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profits or a holiday home that you want rented out when not in use via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth your visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at emil.gorgies, G-O-R-G-E-E-S, at tokyorealty.jp.
That's pretty awesome, actually. So is it just because they had unrealistic expectations of the Japan market, or they're just being, you know, difficult?
No, not of the market itself, but of the way things work here, right? So,
Yeah.
You know, like they send you an email with, you know, 15 different properties, and, you know, we can't find, can we get the full addresses for all of those and organize a viewing for all of them next week? And like,
no,
that's not going to happen. If that's what you're expecting, I don't think I'm going to be able to meet your expectations. And here's how it works here. Right. So yeah, but they're good boys now.
Okay.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, as Westerners, you have to learn to put a lot of your Western expectations, leave them at the dock before you come in. So, I mean, you've got to bring your chutzpah with you, bring your chutzpah into the country, which is probably a missing gene in a lot of cases.
Oh, yeah, there's room for creativity and
absolutely,
acceptance.
But that's the thing,
you need to know the rules in order to don't break them.
Exactly.
I was saying to somebody the other day, or I think it was maybe in an interview, I can't remember, but I'm not saying, like, a lot of Japanese buyers will buy a property with very few questions asked. Like, they actually, here's the listing, the agent said it's this and that, and they said that, there's no more information available. So, okay, I'll make my decision and I'll buy it or I won't. But I'm not saying that, that we as foreign buyers shouldn't be asking the questions that we're used to asking overseas. We definitely, there's nothing wrong with wanting to, to do your due diligence properly, but you got to know how to do it, how to speak to the agent or the seller on the other side to actually try and get them to get that information for you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. Very true. Yeah. Mm. So what are your favorite YouTube channels, Matt? Are you watching things like people who are renovating Akias or...
I don't watch any of it. Tokyo Llama. Go watch Tokyo Llama. He's a good guy.
Tokyo Llama? What's that?
He's one of the bigger... We did an episode with him on his channel. He bought a place, I think in Ibaraki, is it? And he's been renovating it for a little bit over a year. Maybe it's probably closer to 2 years at this point. But, like a proper Kominka fixer-upper, all DIY. Really kind of doing it one step at a time. Very like concerted, well thought effort. I was about to say plotting, but that's got a negative connotation. I mean, he's doing it correctly and understands like, okay, this is a proper renovation.
200,000 subscribers. He's big.
Yeah. He's pretty big stuff. Cool. We did an episode with him last August. I believe. Yeah, it was on my birthday last year. Oh my God, that was almost a year ago now.
Are you August too, Matt? When in August?
I'm August 2nd.
Okay. Yeah,
your birthday?
You're not a cool Leo. Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm the weird Leo that like now I'm not a Leo, but I was.
I'm August.
Oh, on leap years. On leap years, maybe you're a Leo, right?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm 86. So, well, yeah, I guess I'm on leap years.
I'm August 6th. You know.
Hey, August 2nd.
Oh, I accept.
Bitcoin. You know, I accept Ethereum.
I accept promises of. I don't know. I was going to say something rude then, but I stopped.
Yeah, good
bottles of wine. I thought that was your thing, Tracy. Bottles of wine.
Bottles of wine, absolutely. Yeah, chocolates, flowers, no problem. Yeah.
Okay, so we got Matt on August 2nd, you on August 6th, and me on August 17th.
Oh my God, are you kidding me? We're all August.
Yeah. What we need from our subscribers and viewers is a gift box containing a bottle of wine, some quality whiskey, chocolates, and what do you want, Matt?
We were having a conversation about horror movies recently. I want the most independent, unheard of VHS tape of horror that can possibly be found.
You actually have a VHS player? Are you serious?
Oh, dude, like this is one of the many fun things about Akia, and when you're able to just grab whatever is in there. You want a VHS player? I can get you one for free.
I have a friend who likes to explore these, and he said that if you take anything, you will be haunted.
It's occurred to me, yes. There's like a lot of home movies that I've definitely held and thought, maybe I could watch this. But then I was just like, that's a little bit over the line.
I just found Tokyo Llama. That looks really cool.
You didn't know. I thought everybody knew about Tokyo Llama.
No, there's some people that I'm also following on Facebook in those sort of building and renovation groups that I think we're all in. And there's some people doing some really thoughtful, they're doing it piece by piece and some really good talent. Like you know, obviously the you know the carpentry is a hobby, but they're being very intentional and making things really beautiful. So I don't have the patience for that. I want it now. So
yeah, I mean, you can do the now thing, but Tokyo Llama does an excellent job with. I mean, it's like a Better Homes and Gardens kind of like, or what's this old house? Is that the name of that show that's been around for however many decades? I mean, is it fast? Hell no. But is he doing it correctly? Is he learning as he goes? Is, you know, like it's an excellent example of like the lifestyle approach to renovation.
Project of Love. That's all we keep talking about, right?
Yeah, he does a very good job of that.
There's a guy who I was speaking to recently. He's a Scandinavian model, I think, and he's doing his own renovation.
Oh, the gardener. Scandinavian? I thought he was Swedish. Scandinavian?
He's a model of, you know, and he's got a ton of, I mean, I guess because he's a model, he's got a ton of subscribers. Oh,
what, the guy who just moved here? I don't want to say his name.
Oh no! Not him. This is someone who's been here for a little while and actually speaks Japanese, and he's been renovating an akiya in the middle of Tokyo and YouTubing it as well. So
okay,
and he's managed to pick up some he's Swedish. Yeah, he's picked up a couple of endorsements from IKEA and places like that to sponsors to on his channel.
The wacky thing about it that, I mean, one of just, there's, you can think about renovations in IKEA in any number of ways, but like the other thing is too, guess what? That person is getting a pretty decent workout by renovating, right? So there's like a health, there's a physical wellness kind of aspect to it as well.
Yeah, right. Agriculture and building is two of the industries that will definitely give you physical benefits. Yeah.
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 It's great seeing people document. I mean, that's one of many use cases. Ziv, as you pointed out, it's kind of the slow burn, like it's going to take some years. But that is one of the many use cases for Akio, of just what Tokyo Llama is doing, kind of the rural Japan version of this old house, you know.
I'm just trying to find it so that I can show you, but no, I can't find it right now.
Now that the borders are slowly creeping open, a lot of these places can actually finally be utilized as minpaku or Airbnb or guest houses.
So it's kind of interesting that you say, I mean, you're correct. I'm not disagreeing with you, but we also have, or I also have clients that I'm consulting with, tourism clients, saying like, oh boy, when that inbound comes in, you know, the gates wide open. I'm like, you don't know when that's going to happen and what, if and when it does happen, what it's going to look like. Like it might be open like it is now, but North Korean style.
I'm not saying like the floodgates will open, but I'm saying at least there's some hope for these places now, right?
Well, yeah, and so, but the thing is that I've been consulting on pretty extensively over the last like 2 months, which is one reason why I've been so busy, is these tourism companies, just boy oh boy, do they have their eyes set on inbound tourism. And I come in and they're like, oh, you know, when it, if and when it, and I come in there saying Azabu Juban, like go after the domestic foreign market that is right in front of you and underserved right now with the cash to spend. Stop waiting for inbound and do domestic. And they're like, wait, what? I've never thought of this. It's like, yeah, there's an entire treasure chest living in your back, you know, your backyard. Go after that.
But when you say domestic, are these, because I mean, domestic foreigners usually have Japanese spouses, and so they can hook, you know, they can hook into the normal Japanese minpaku channels, and the Japanese are not going to come and stay with foreigners.
Only so much, because if you, I'll need to tiptoe around this a little bit, but if you think about your typical international couple that is wealthy and lives in Tokyo, there's a certain set of kind of, maybe not requirements, but like expectations that are kind of like baked into what that couple looks like. And if that's what they want, the baked-in product, then they can go get it. It's Karuizawa, it's Atami, it's Hakuba, it's Niseko, it's those places. If they want that, not that hard to access. If they want anything outside of that that they're comfortable with, nobody caters to that at all, right?
Well, your typical Japanese minpaku out in the countryside, there's plenty of places that are already established that can take guests, no?
Yeah, there's many of them, but Tracy, as I'm sure you very well know, a lot of the time, the more rural and more like minpaku-y and weird you get, the worse the marketing gets. And so those things exist all over the place. Part of my, not even my job, just part of my passion about all of this stuff is getting the word out about these radical spots that are difficult to find, right? But they're difficult to find. And they frequently shoot themselves in the foot, just countless, just infinitely. It's like, oh my God, you have such a great product. Please let me do your everything. Let me do your operations because you are awful at it.
Tell us what you really think, Matt.
Yeah, I'm pretty blunt about a lot of this stuff at this point because I've seen so many excellent minpaku and not Airbnbs, but like mom and pop.
Yeah, mom and
breakfast kind of spots that have an outstanding product with outstanding service, but they're just so bad at advertising themselves that they end up, you know,
send them my way, because that's what I do. I try to teach people how to market, like, and I'm not talking marketing.
I try to.
They don't listen, Tracy. They just listen.
The idea of learning, of admitting that what they are doing is not effective and is in fact costing them money. Just getting them to understand that is a massive hurdle. I'm trying to flip them over to you.
And it depends what. Honestly, though, it does depend on their why. Like, what is their reason for existing? Are they wanting to make a fortune, or are they wanting a lifestyle choice? So that's a decision that you can't help them with. I can't help them with, but I can help them find what their goal actually is, and then when they've figured that out. All right, well, then what's the action plan to make that goal happen? But the goal setting piece is completely missing.
And I don't think they're in a mind frame to even look at what their goal is, because most of them, if I look at the places where we've stayed in the past, it's mom and pop is the right word, and they've been doing it for maybe a couple of generations already. And, you know, the places on that little hand-drawn map that visitors to the local information center get, and that's how we get our customers. And it's been like that for decades. And
we're not going to change. Yep.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, and a lot of people who do work in this sort of short-term rental, when you talk about raising prices and you say, look, you could be charging a lot more, you're offering value, but a lot of people feel very awkward about that because they don't want to be ripping people off.
It's like,
you charge the value of what you're delivering and not the cost.
We've got the opposite story of that right now going on with a property that we're working on, a ryokan, 14 rooms, two separate onsen. It is still operational. The bank is like, they're in arrears at the moment. And the major reason for that is that the person in charge of it thought that they had a much more expensive value proposition than they actually did.
Yikes.
Right? And so they thought that they were super fancy, and they were super fancy, except in a very unreachable location with awful marketing. And so they just ran themselves into the ground. Right. And so that can also be the case. Sometimes it's the opposite case, like what you were just talking about, which is, oh, geez, you don't even know this is a diamond in the rough. Like, just polish this up and it'll be amazing. And then what I was just describing is, oh, wow. Like, yeah, it's nice, but you didn't really think about anything but, you know, spending a lot of money on renovation and not how do people get here or cost.
I've got a friend who's doing inbound tourism into Saga Prefecture. So that's up down here in Kyushu. And he's saying that because the government is offering subsidies and grants to people who will build tourism attractions, whether it's a hotel or an onsen or a ryokan or what have you. So a lot of like local tea farmers or people who've had a plot of land and you know, never did anything with it because which they inherited are like, wow, the government's paying 30% of construction costs, so let's build a hotel and people will come. And no,
I see this all the time. It's and same thing, even just with renovations, of an already established Minpaku or Airbnb or short-term stay or something still doesn't fucking get it that they are not advertising themselves and they do not have the throughput mm-hmm. to make sense of any expenditure. And they just say, oh my God, 70% at some of them. So, you know, they renovate all of the bathrooms and just say, it's nice and fancy. Thus, people will come. And it's like,
what? Put a big sign outside and somebody will drive by and come stay.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. It's like, no, this is the lost cause that I deal with constantly. Right. And unfortunate as it is, those are the situations that I don't care to deal with anymore. I want to work with organizations and people who will move the ball forward such that in a few years' time, this stuff catches on and those lost causes can finally convert.
But yeah, no point to convince the unconvinced. I agree with that 100%.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait.
What?
This is such a high quality production, Zoom.
Bring a goat, Matt. Bring a goat back.
I need to do a plug and an endorsement and a thank you because Ziv, for a little bit, like a year or so, I was rather curious about those NFC business cards, but I didn't do anything. And then you were like, hey, I've got one. It's pretty cool. So I got the expensive one.
I can't see it. Okay,
check this out.
No.
Then if you want to scan the QR code, you can do that too.
So, no, send me that because I want one. Actually, I want a couple. So
it's awesome. Thank you, Ziv. Yes.
Yeah.
What are they called? Vice.
V1CE is the
right.
the Vice
with the one instead of an I, yeah.
Yeah.
They should be paying us for actually I'll reach out to them for sponsorship because they've been getting a lot of publicity on this podcast.
Yeah. No, it's an excellent product. I use it all the time now because it's so easy.
Yeah. I just wish I could convince more. Like whenever I meet a Japanese person who's an entrepreneur or independent, they're immediately signing up. But if it's somebody who works for a company, like my boss will not go for that.
Yeah, well, but then I mostly don't want
to. People that you scan, are you able then to know who scanned it so that you can then have a follow, like then you can come and put them into your CRM so that you can follow up with them. It's like,
there's something to be done. I'm still,
guys, this is what you need to do. You need to add this to your CRM so that you know who you've spoken to about what, and it gives you a to-do reminder list about who you need to speak to after the event.
Well, you'd need to get their permission, though. There'll be privacy concerns there. So you giving them the card means that they want to add you to their contact list.
Tracy, you're just ruining all the fun.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, yeah. We'll get them to add the feature in the next release. All right, well, thank you for your time, folks.
Yeah,
we shall see you again soon.
Stay hydrated. It's very, very hot right now.
Stay alive.
And bye, Akia. Bye, Akia. And come and stay in Tokyo at a short-term rental.
Go to Fukuoka, too. It's a great place.
All right. See you soon.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So there you have it. As promised, casual but deep. I think we touched on quite a few macro and micro topics related to Akia's directly or indirectly. I really enjoyed this chat. Hope you did as well. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.